Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on a Saturday. I thought it was Sunday, but it's not. It's Saturday, November 3rd, 2012. This is episode 923. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile.com. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size, easily and securely, with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or other smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth at Gazelle.com. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, MP3 player, blah, blah, blah. Sold them. Everything with a chip in it. That's what we talk about here on the show. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. I think we're done with the devices. No, we're not. I take it back. I thought we were done with the new devices for 2012. I think in a couple of weeks there's a new Windows phone or two. Then we can finally stop talking about the new stuff and then start speculating about the next new stuff. I'm actually ready to start speculating about the next new stuff right now. Why wait? I've got the iPad mini in my hot little hands. It's an interesting device. It fits insides. If you want an idea of the size, it's just it's the same width as the regular iPad screen, not the whole iPad, just the screen, and a little bit shorter. But in theory, it's the idea is it's the same real estate as the iPad, just shrunk down. And I have to say, I like the size. I've been a fan of 7-inch tablets since my first 7. You never forget your first 7-inch. Back more than a year ago, the Samsung Galaxy 7, which, I got it a year ago last summer, so 18 months ago. At that time, I said, oh, I like 7 inches. I think it's a good size. And in fact, my favorite 7-inch tablet is the Galaxy Nexus, which is another Google product, kind of the follow-up to the Samsung. But there's a difference between the way Apple does 7 inches. Well, first of all, it's not 7 inches. It's 7.9. Well, okay. But there's also a difference in terms of aspect ratio because the other 7-inch tablets are all 16 by 9. Now, best way to explain this is your home theater system. Your old TV was a 4 by 3. You know, the one you watched I Love Lucy on, Gilligan's Island, I Dream of Jeannie. That was a 4 by 3 screen. And then your plasma, your LCD, your widescreen TVs, they're 16 by 9 to better accommodate video. And, it's funny because Apple with the iPad is still 4 by 3. And it might seem like, well, golly, I'm not watching I Love Lucy. Why would they do that? But what else is 4 by 3 in your life? A musician sent me an email and explained this to me. I wasn't thinking. He says, it's the same aspect ratio as an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. So there is still 4 by 3 stuff in our life. It's called sheet music, paper. And it turns out in some ways when what you're doing is an analog, not of video, not of television and movies, but of paper, newspaper, reading a book. I have to say, I like the 4 by 3 better. It did feel a little weird to read a Kindle book on the Kindle Fire and the Nexus 7 because they're so tall, you know. But when you read a Kindle book on the iPad, even on the iPad Mini, it feels right. It feels like I have to say the iPad Mini doesn't fit in your hand, even though the ads show it. I mean, I guess it does, but I don't think you're going to hold it like that because it's a bit of a, even for, well, I don't have massive hands. Actually, I have kind of small hands. I guess if you're a basketball player, if you have big hands, if you're a guy with big hands, you won't. But I feel a little bit of a stretch. Feels like a yoga position. It's not fully comfortable to hold it in one hand. So I suspect you'll do as we did with the other iPad, which is hold it with two hands. That's fine. Not the end of the world. It's very light. Kind of is like reading in a Kindle. So I have to say the iPad Mini, I'm liking it. I'm about to go on a 2-week trip to Australia, putting together my traveling kit, and I probably will prefer the Mini over the standard sized iPad. It's lighter, it's more compact, and it's got the same screen real estate. Well, sort of. Now this is where the negatives come in. The biggest negative, and I don't know why, there are two negatives that make me kind of mad because I know why Apple did it, and I feel like it's a greedy thing on their part. First of all, it's not a Retina. It's not a high-res display. It's 1024 by 768. It's like the iPad 1 and 2. And even at this small size, you do notice that when you look closely, text is not as crisp as it ought to be. It's not as clear. Maybe because we're used to the Retina displays. I even have a Retina laptop, and I far prefer a high. What does Retina mean, by the way? It's a marketing term. It's not a technical term. But as Apple defines Retina, and ophthalmologists I've spoken to agree, it's a dot size, a number of dots or pixels per inch that are high enough that you can't see the pixels at normal viewing distance. So that means on. And I'm going to have to get my DPI calculator out here to fill you in on what that means. Because they're all different pixels per inch now. Unfortunately. There's a great little, it's from a ping.de DPI calculator that I use all the time to figure this stuff out. The third generation Apple iPad, and the fourth too for that matter, the Retina Apple iPad, is 2048 by 1536. Now, that means on a 9.7-inch screen that it's 264 pixels per inch. 264. And they call that Retina because at the kind of half-arm's length that you would read an iPad screen, you can't see the dots. It's very crisp. In fact, it really is. It's kind of spoils us, to be honest. The iPhone 5 is 325 pixels per inch, or actually 326 if you round up. That's even more. That's a lot. 325 pixels per inch. But then we go 1024 by 768 in a 7.9-inch, and we go down a little bit. Like half as much, 162 pixels per inch. And what that means is text isn't as crisp, images aren't as crisp. Yeah, it's a smaller screen. You probably won't. The point is that Apple could have made this a Retina display. Even at the price point that they're charging, $329, there's no reason why they couldn't. The other thing I'm not thrilled about is it has the same 5-megapixel camera as the iPhone 4. And the iPad. I would love to have seen the 8-megapixel camera on the iPhone 4S and 5. So, because, you know, this is a nice size. This now doesn't, you don't look quite so goofy holding this, taking pictures. You really look goofy. And somebody told me that they were at a David Byrne concert. And he said, take as many pictures as you want, but please don't do it with an iPad. Why? Because, well, you're at a concert and somebody's got this big old screen as they take pictures. It just looks like it's terrible. Ruins the view. This isn't so bad. And it should be great for taking a video and so forth. So, it's not that it's bad. It's that Apple could have and didn't. And I know why they did it. It's cynical. They want to give you something to buy next year. Because guess what? Next year, for sure, this will have a Retina display. The iPad Mini. And I don't know whether it'll have an 8-megapixel camera or not. However, having said that, this is the $329 version I have because I wanted it now and the Wi-Fi only version is only available now. 32 gigs of memory, that's a lot. That's not an insignificant amount. I got all my audiobooks for the plane trip, all my music for the plane trip on 32 gigs and a bunch of apps. It doesn't have GPS, so I didn't put the map app, you know, the driving apps, the GPS, all those. I left those out. This is to me, and I didn't put, nor did I put Apple's Pages or Keynote or any of the productivity apps on here because, to me, this is not a creation tool. It's a it's it's for the airplane. I can't wait. I'm going to get on the airplane and I'm going to be able to keep myself entertained for 14 and a half hours on the way to Sydney. It's bigger than an iPod Touch. It's all a little bit more expensive. I think, what is it? The iPod Touch starts at $299. The Touch is Retina. This is not. All right, we have to take a break. I'm going to tease you. I'm going to do like Apple did. I'll tell you my bottom line when we come back.
From the moment I heard Frau say I had a clone,
it's Mini-Man.
I knew that I'd be safe because I'd never be alone. An evil doctor shouldn't speak aloud about his feelings. My hurt and my pain don't make me too appealing. I hope Scott would look up to me, run the business of the family. Had an evil
the point, he's that guy.
Dad, give him my love and the things I never had. Scott would think I was a cool guy.
It's Mini-Me, Mini-Mac. Now, so I'm a little... I just think Apple... Okay, let me... Too many thoughts cascading through my brain. We're looking at the iPad Mini. Just came out. Wi-Fi available now. The 3G version will be available soon. Of course, in response, Google dropped the price on its Nexus 7. The Nexus 7 is, in terms of pure capability, just assume they're equal at this point. There are 700,000 Android apps, 750,000 iPhone apps. In both cases, there's about 400, maybe 500,000 more apps than you care about already. There's plenty, in other words. So it's not the apps. It's not even the ecosystem. I think Google Play and iTunes, very similar. There may be a political, you know, you may have a political difference or preference for one or the other. The form factor of the Mini is a winner for me. I like the 4x3. I'm a little angry that Apple said... What Apple decided to do is make it as inexpensively as they could. Still more, much more. 100, what is it? 100, it's 329 compared to... For a 32 gig compared to 250. So it's $80 more than the comparable Nexus 7. Is it $130, J.C. Calhoun? What's the Nexus? The Nexus 7 for 250, you get 32 gigs now. For $329 on the both Wi-Fi, for $329 on the iPad Mini, you get 32 gigs. I think it's the same. So it's $80 difference. Is it worth $80 more? That's a very good question, to be honest. I'm going to have to leave price aside. That's up to you and how price sensitive you are. The Nexus 7, if the $80 makes a big difference to you, the Nexus 7 is just as good. Just as good. Screen-wise, functionality, applications, fantastic. However, if you've invested a lot in the iPad ecosystem, you might want to spend more because you don't want to rebuy apps. It's probably more than $80 worth of apps, right? Not to mention the trouble of downloading them all. One could argue that iOS is a little more polished. But one could also argue that Android is a little bit more capable, isn't it? For me, it comes down to the aspect ratio. Now, the Android screen on the Nexus 7 is a higher res screen. A lot pixels per inch, much better. It's a beautiful screen. But I think you should go look at them both. And to me, I like a 4x3 for the stuff I'm doing. If you're watching movies, you might want a widescreen. You might prefer it. If what you do mostly is watch video and movies, it's not what I do on my tablet, but if it's what you do mostly, then the Nexus 7 probably is the right choice for you. It's 1280 by 807 inches, so that's 215 pixels per inch. Remember, the iPad Mini only 165. And that does matter. I know that seems like we're making a big deal about that. That may be the stat that matters most, because you're looking at it all the time. I would have liked to see Apple maybe offer a Retina version with a better camera, even if it's $100 more. Then it would be an absolute no-brainer. But I was skeptical about the Mini, especially because of the lack of a Retina display. Having played with this now, this is the one I'm going to probably live with on the airplane, on the trip. This is the right size. It's very, very light feels good in the hand, and I like the 4x3. When you look at things like Flipboard and the Kindle app, it's just a little bit better on this, I think. So my initial reaction on the Mini when I first read about it is, this is a flop, this is terrible, why didn't they make it Retina, why didn't they put a better camera in, who's going to spend $329? The truth is, I don't see this as a low-priced iPad. I think that's maybe a mistake Apple made. They should consider this a smaller iPad, not a cheaper iPad. And maybe that then makes sense to you. A smaller, not a cheaper iPad. It's okay to pay more for less or pay as much for less. Smaller isn't worse. It's more convenient. It's more portable. It's easier to sit in bed with it. So I think that's fine. I think this will sell well. I think when people see it, it'll sell well. So let me get this straight, because the chat room's saying my math is wrong. $329 for a Wi-Fi iPad Mini, right? Oh, maybe I got the bigger one. Ah, I should check. Maybe do they start at 16? I apologize. I'm not up. Let's go shop the iPad Mini. $329 is 16 gigs. You're right. I apologize. So to make apples to apples, it is $129 more. Man, now that's a lot, actually. All right. $130 more for the same size, same amount of memory. If you want 32 gigs, it's $250 on a Nexus 7, $429 for an iPad Mini. You know what? I'm throwing it away, going back to the Nexus 7. That is enough of a price differential. These are close enough that it's probably not worth. That's a big difference. 50% more. That's a big difference. Forget about it. On the other hand, if price is not an object, I do. This is nice. You're right. Okay, $80, it didn't bother me. $130? The Nexus 7 is so good. It's so complete. Well, there's a couple things you're not getting a back camera, though, are you, on the Nexus 7? No, you're not. So if you want to take pictures, is that worth a little bit of money? What's wild is $300 you get a 16 or 32 gig iPod Touch. I'm a flip-flopper. Do not vote for me for president. I can just tell you that right now. I'll change my mind at the drop of a hat. People act like changing your mind is a bad thing, by the way. You probably shouldn't do it in the period of 30 seconds, as I just did. But I think if you get new facts, changing your mind is not such a bad thing. Anyway, Tom in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hey there, Leo. How's it going?
Thanks for calling. I'm doing great.
Hey there. I am looking for a new USB headset for my computer.
Yes, that's a great thing. Now, people often think they'll just plug it into the analog, you know, the audio ports, and that does not give you a good result. If you're using Skype or you're gaming, get a USB. You're absolutely right. Is it for gaming or for Skype?
Actually, Skype and doing webinars via GoToWebinar.
Ah, how fun. Well, I'll tell you what we buy our podcasters, because now there are a lot of good choices. Logitech makes some great ones. Are you on a Mac or PC?
On a Mac.
Okay, that does matter, because Logitechs often don't work very well on Macs. They don't seem to do drivers for the Macs very well. So I recommend the Plantronics .audio, and I think the model number is the 655. That's what we send our podcasters, and we're very happy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I mentioned to Kyle that I loaded up this iPad Mini with classical music, because I got a long flight on Sunday, 14 and a half hours to Sydney from San Francisco. And what I like to do is stick in the Edemotic headphones, because they seal out everything. You can't hear any sounds, especially that kid behind you screaming. And then put classical music on and try to sleep. Sometimes I'll put a blanket over my head, which doesn't help. 8888 Ask Leo. It's also appropriate because it's Scott Wilkinson time, and he is, after all, a wind man. That Scott will be here next week, and I should mention to host the show. He's going to fill in for me while I'm in Australia. So if you like home theater, if you're interested in home theater, it'll be all home theater all day next weekend with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Good day to you, Scott.
Hey, Leo, you bet.
Have you ever played that on a, what is that, a French horn?
No, I have. It's the whole orchestra.
Well,
playing.
I know it is, but I mean, you play wind instruments, so would you be playing that on the French horn?
I would on trombone.
Trombone, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know Beethoven had trombones in his time.
He did. He wrote trombones in several of the symphonies. The fifth, I'm pretty sure. The sixth and the ninth, certainly.
Love the ninth.
And typically in that period, the trombone was used either as the voice of God. Or the voice of doom.
Or both.
In
most cases, yeah. Scott Wilkinson writes for a great magazine, The Secrets of Home Theater Hi-Fi, at hometheaterhi-fi.com. You can he answers questions there, but you can also watch his podcast every Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. Yep. Home Theater Geeks. And you're going to be, now, I want to let you off the hook here.
Uh-oh.
You said you're going to stay in my place. I'm putting you up next weekend, and then you said you.
I appreciate that.
You said you'd calibrate the home theater. You don't need to do that.
Oh, but I want to.
Well, you can play with it, but don't. I'm a little worried because there's things. There's things not right. For instance, and maybe you'll figure this out. Okay, there's something called ARC, Audio Return Channel on HDMI.
Yes. Yes.
So the Viera that I bought, the new Panasonic, is actually neat because it's of all of them. I've tried a number of smart TVs. The LG to Samsung, and now this Panasonic. Of them, Panasonic easily the best smart apps.
I would have to agree.
Well laid out, makes sense. They've got social media. It's kind of fun. You can actually squeeze the video over and watch a Twitter feed. They've got a Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, all the stuff that I want. Vudu.
Yep. You can even do Skype if you have a.
Skype, and it's nicely laid out. It's logical. It feels fairly fast, which is sometimes an issue with these TVs. They don't put very big processors in them. So I got the GT50, and I'm very happy with that.
Good.
Anyway, you'll get to see it, and it has something called Audio Return Channel on the HDMI, and then so does my Denon. Just one, not HDMI one. Oddly enough, it's HDMI two.
Yeah, I found that a bit odd too. Okay.
Anyway, so I plugged my Denon receiver into it. It also supports Audio Return Channel, and the reason I wanted that is because when I'm watching Netflix on the TV, the audio's on the TV. And I want to get it back into my home theater so it can surround me.
Yes.
I finally figured that out. I got it working.
Good.
Yeah. You have to go into Viera Connect. There's all these weird settings. I literally had to search Google, and I found it finally. But I got another question. And maybe when you come over, you can fix this. Isn't it nice?
Sure.
Scott's going to come over and fix it. Wouldn't that be nice? Everybody should know Scott. Just come over and fix it.
Sure, I'll be right over.
When I listen to Pandora, it's only in left and right. It thinks it's stereo. It doesn't use the subwoofer, which is the main thing, or the center channel, but I'd love it to use the subwoofer.
Well, the Pandora is undoubtedly stereo. a stereo. So it's only got two channels.
But wouldn't it use the sub?
Not necessarily, unless you have the receiver set up so that it reroutes everything below 80 hertz, say.
Ah, so maybe I need to turn on the crossover. I did the Odyssey setup. That's fun, the automated setup where you plug in a microphone, and it saw the subwoofer and the surround channels. But I guess maybe there's a setting in there that I have to turn on.
Well, I would go in and check and make sure that it specified your main right and left speakers as what's called small.
Oh, I said they were big.
See, that's why you're not getting the sub.
He's so smart. So if I say small, that means, they can't handle a low end. You better use a subwoofer.
That's right.
But they are big. They're towers.
Yeah, but they probably don't go down as low as the subwoofer.
No, the subwoofer rattles the house.
That's right. So this is why I always recommend, if you have a subwoofer and a 5.1 system or even a 2.1 system, in your receiver, you really need to specify your speakers as small, even if they're not physically small. As in your case, you've got these new Aperians, right? Which probably sound great.
Yeah, they sound wonderful.
But they probably don't go as low as the subwoofer.
Right.
And you're not going to get the low frequencies from the main right and left channel in the subwoofer unless you specify small speakers in the receiver.
Good to know.
So
good to
that's
know.
The answer to that question.
Boy, see, again, if you know Scott, you can ask him. But next week he's going to be you got him all day. You can ask all the questions you want. Scott will be here.
That's right.
For that. That's
actually not next week, the following week.
Oh, really?
The 17th and 18th. Yeah, the next week, 10th and 11th. You're going to be gone, but you've pre-recorded a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to be on virtually, which is very nice. That's pre-recorded great. A couple of segments.
Oh, good. Well, I told my son not to have a party next weekend, but he could have a party the weekend after. I better change that.
It's the other way around.
Oh, dear. Uh-oh. Yeah,
no.
Okay.
I'm going to have a party the weekend after next.
Now, Scott, no parties in the house. All right. I've got the neighbors checking out. All right, we got time for some questions from your audience. What do you got for us?
Yes, I got a quick question here. Not from the chat room, but rather from my thing here. Oh, yes, a question about speaker sensitivity. You've seen this specification probably, speaker sensitivity.
Yes.
It usually specifies 89 dB or 92 dB. And Nathan Daniels wants to know, does this rating mean that a given speaker will play a certain SPL, sound pressure level, at a given power, or does it also suggest how loud the speaker can be pushed before distortion occurs?
Oh.
And the answer is only the former. It specifies how loud a speaker will play given 1 watt of power, only 1 watt of power, with the microphone at a distance of 1 meter from the speaker. So under those specific conditions, you put in 1 watt of power, you have a microphone 1 meter from the speaker, you measure how loud it is.
You're not measuring distortion or anything else, just how loud it is, sound pressure.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And most speakers are in the 85 to 90-something range.
That seems pretty loud for 1 watt.
It's very loud, which explains and illustrates why the amount of power in an amplifier is not so critical. It's not like you really need 500 watts of power,
right?
Because you're only going to use the first couple of watts most of the time anyway, which is why audiophiles who love tube amps, and these tube amps might have 5 or 10 watts of power, it's fine, especially if they get high sensitivity speakers.
That's amazing. 5 or 10 watts per channel seems so little.
I know.
The amps I'm buying, they're 100 watts per channel, you know.
Right.
But that's the peak level. The nice thing about tube, I would guess, is it doesn't distort as quickly.
Actually, it does distort.
It does.
Tubes. Oh. Yes, but in a way that many people like.
A pleasant kind.
Exactly.
Scott Wilkinson, he's going to be here 2 weeks from now. You get all your questions answered. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I got it all wrong. Scott will be here not next week, but the week after. If you have a question, a home theater question for Scott Wilkinson, his podcast, Home Theater Geeks, really great. If you're in, I mean, that's for the hardcore home theater geek, aptly named, every Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. You can watch live at twit.tv or get it after the fact at twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. Our website for the radio show, and actually there'll be a link there for that as well, is techguylabs.com. James DeRuvo's writing down links and things I talk about. Puts it up there on the site, all 923 shows worth. And then after the fact, my friend Josh Windisch adds video, and so you can watch the question, watch my answer. And then if you would, make any additions or comments would be very helpful. Tech guy, and you, no charge, please. It's always free. I'm trying to build a database of great answers to tech questions. TechGuyLabs.com. That's the website. You'll find there also a link to our chat room. Lots of nice people in there. Great place to go if you want to, you know, kibitz with the kids in the back of the class. And the phone number is also on the website, but I'll tell you right now. It's 8888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones we go. Jeff in Phoenix. Hey, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
So, you got me all excited about the new Mac. The Mac Mini, and I'm interested in the new 15-inch with Retina.
Yeah, that's what I have, the MacBook Pro. They made a 13 as well.
I was holding out for the 15, and now it's here. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
So, my question to you is, where do I go to buy it? it looks like it's the same price everywhere.
It this is. Will be
It is.
I mean, if you get a savings, it's a very minor savings. Occasionally, there's student stay save discounts and so forth. But my strong preference is buy it at the Apple store. They have the most knowledgeable salespeople. That's why Apple has been so successful with retail, because it really is the best place to buy an Apple device of any kind. They're very helpful, knowledgeable to help you set it up. They have classes that you can take. I just think they do. They have shown up, and it's one of the reasons I think companies like Best Buy are struggling. They've shown up everybody else, all the other retailers. They said, this is how you do it.
Okay. Well, that was kind of my question, because I didn't know where, if I'm a PC guy, and, you know, if you shop around enough, you can find the really great deals. But shopping
Apple,
yeah.
When you go Apple, you're basically giving up on price. You're saying, okay, Apple, it's up to whatever you want. Here it is. Take me away. But I got to say, it's worth it. I have the 15-inch MacBook Pro, and it is without a doubt the best computer I've ever used. And ironically, it is probably the fastest Mac sold, faster even than the Mac Pros. I have a couple-year-old Mac Pro because they haven't updated those. It is fantastic. And this is why I was a little bit disturbed or disappointed that the iPad mini did not have a Retina display. Once you get used to a high DPI, high dots per inch display, it really spoils you.
That's what I'm excited about.
You're going to love it.
The photography and the video going.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things you'll want to do is get a desktop wallpaper. I mean, unless you're happy with a stock wallpaper, but one of the things you would want to do is get desktop wallpaper of that high resolution. Because it just looks so, so good when you see it. And that I got mine from a site called interfacelift.com. And it's free, interfacelift.com. And they have a variety of wallpapers, all photographic, but I like landscape photography as my desktop.
I do too. My own pictures will be my wallpaper.
If you are, that's right, you said you're a photographer. Yes. Stuff you shoot with that 5D, make sure you get it at, the right resolution for the screen, and you're going to be very, very happy.
Yeah. Oh, I'm in the other camp. I have a Nikon 7000.
No, that's fine. No, I'm not fussy. It's plenty of dots per inch, let me tell you.
That's what I was planning on. Okay.
Hey, great, Jeff. Yeah, for a photographer, Retina is fantastic. You'll also want to get Retina-enabled apps. Now, Lightroom, Adobe has not yet Lightroom-enabled, or has not yet Retina-enabled Lightroom.
That's a little disappointing. Or no, wait. I was going to Aperture.
Aperture, yes. Of course, Apple has updated everything. And if you use Aperture, you'll be so happy. Because what happens is that display does not normally run at the full resolution. It's 1440 by 990, whatever it is, normally. Except when you do something like Aperture, then the interface stays at that lower resolution for speed, but the pictures are rendered at the full DPI of the screen, and that is gorgeous. You don't have to worry about it. It's just accept it. They do the right thing. I was very confused when Apple started doing this Retina, because I thought, well, wait a minute, they're not operating at native resolution. And if you do set it to native resolution, actually, Apple doesn't even let you do it. You have to get a third-party app. You'll see that all the interface elements are too small to use. So that's why. But what they use is they use sub-pixel rendering for text so that they're able to make the text look super crisp. And then when they need to, they will use the full resolution, as in Aperture. And then you get every dot. It is gorgeous, Jeff. You'll be super happy. Yeah, enjoy that new Mac. I cannot recommend it more highly. Now, I have the 15. I think the 13-inch is maybe not quite so fast. And you do need speed when you're pushing, I think it's a 4-megapixel screen, something like that. You need a lot of power. That's a lot of dots. Tom in Harrisburg, PA. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I'm in the market for a high-definition TV, and it used to be, just for frame of reference to narrow this down, I used to be a Sony fan, but as you're aware, I guess Sony's kind of in a lot of financial difficulties, at least their display units. So I have a good friend.
I should be honest, all the Japanese manufacturers are, and that includes Panasonic, Pioneer, Sony.
Yeah, well, I have a good friend that has an LG set. He's very pleased with it. So for this purpose, I'm looking at a 47-inch LG TV. And, of course, the set makers today are making them 3D capable and smart. What I'd like to know, and I read some confusing articles on the internet, does the picture quality degrade if all you're going to do is really look at 2D? I mean, I wear
It degrades when you go to 3D. But it does not, no. So the deal is now all the high-end TVs have 3D. My TV has 3D. I'm not going to ever watch 3D.
Right.
It doesn't even come with glasses. It's like, well, we'll throw it in. If you get a higher-end TV, it will have 3D, but you don't have to watch it. And it does not degrade in any way. It does not impact in any way the 2D picture. It's just not, it's unrelated.
It's not going to, because I wear glasses. I could never wear glasses over glasses.
Oh, I don't like 3D. I think it's a gimmick. I don't like it. Now, by the way, Samsung's Korean, LG's Korean, both make excellent TVs. But Sharp, Pioneer, Package Pioneer is out of the TV business. But Sharp, Panasonic, and Sony, yes, yeah, they're all struggling because they can't sell these things. I think you'll be fine with an LG. If you like it, go for it. Don't hesitate. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Hour two of the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. Time to talk about anything on your mind, as long as it has a chip in it. Computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, gadgets and gizmos galore. We've been talking a little bit about the iPad Mini. I like it. I'm going to be using this, I think, instead of the... Well, now, what do you call the iPad Maxi? That doesn't sound right. The full-sized iPad. On my trip, because it's just a little bit smaller, a little bit more compact. But one thing I would say, and I have a love-hate thing with Apple, as you probably gathered. Because some of the stuff they do is just brilliant and wonderful. And I'm a big fan of the iPad. They came into a market that had already rejected tablet PCs for 10 years. You know, Microsoft started pushing tablets, touchscreen PCs, in 2000. And never got any traction. And Apple just waltzed in 2010, and said, well, how about this? And they've sold, 100 million of them. So I love it. But then they also sell, for an exorbitant cost, given what it does, this smart cover. Now, I have a smart cover on my regular iPad, and it's fine. But I cannot recommend the smart cover for the Mini. It's just ridiculous. It's too wobbly. It doesn't. The magnet doesn't stay on. It doesn't stay folded. It's just there's got to be a better solution. Now, if you're a big smart cover fan, I guess it's okay. But it just keeps falling off and falling over. I don't like it. Save yourself. What do they charge on this thing? Like $40 for this piece of plastic with some magnets in it. Not a fan of the smart cover. I bought it because, well, you know, that's what you do, isn't it? Apple's no fool. It's just kind of like automatic. Buy an iPad? Well, of course you want the smart cover. You're not a fool, are you? Only a fool would buy an iPad without a smart cover. They even kind of make it, you know, like part of the purchase. Can't recommend it. Can't recommend it. I'm very interested in Apple's also selling this thing called the Hue lights. Have you heard about these from Philips? They're expensive, and they're not. They're sold out right now. $200 for the starter pack, which is three light bulbs. Okay, that's a lot, but they are LED, which means they're not going to burn out very fast, right? LED tends to last a long time, and the idea of these Hues is that you control them with your iPhone. Or your iPad, and there's some really interesting features. For instance, I guess there are RGB LEDs in there because they can be programmed for any color. That's why I figure they must have red, green, and blue in it, right? So you could take a picture of a color you really liked and have the Hue light bulbs change to that color exactly. Exactly. Wow. What an interesting idea. It's too bad it's $200 for three light bulbs. I'm tempted. You know me. I'm tempted. You get, for the $300, you get three light bulbs, a bridge, which is what is connected to the Hue, power supply for the bridge, and a network cable to connect the bridge to your router. So you got to have a nearby router, I guess. All right, I'll tell you what. I'll buy it so you don't have to. That's my job. That's what I tell my bookkeeper. Gary, Redondo Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gary.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Before I get to my question, I just wanted to thank you for all of the help you've given me over the years on computers.
Well, my pleasure. I love doing it. As it gives me an excuse to buy stuff like those light bulbs.
Well, I ended up, when I first started college in 1959, I took my first computer class, and then a professor, a few years later, when I was starting graduate school, started this new department called computer science. So I ended up getting my minor in computer science.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. Now, it would have probably been on big mainframe computers, right?
Yeah, IBM 360.
360s using Fortran or COBOL?
Fortran.
Amazing. Yeah. Although, you know, the skills you learn, they're still valid. It's still the same basic idea. Microprocessors, no different than the CPUs of those big 370s. A little more powerful now. A lot more memory.
Yeah.
Storage.
Yeah. It's really been helpful listening to you to be able to keep up on
good.
The computers.
Well, my pleasure. What can I do for you today?
Well, my question is, I heard you raving about the Note 2. So I ordered an unlocked one.
Ooh,
on
good. All right.
Got here, and I took it down. I was assuming, you know, I could use it just about anywhere. I take it down to my Verizon store, and they say, sorry, we can't use it.
Yeah.
One up because it's only for AT&T.
It's GSM. So there, unfortunately, in the U.S., there are two different technologies for cell phones. There's the old original CDMA, and that's what Sprint and Verizon uses. And then there's the more standard GSM. T-Mobile as well as AT&T use GSM, and you can use your Note 2, your unlocked European Note 2 on T-Mobile or AT&T. I use it on AT&T, but you won't get LTE. You'll get HSPA Plus, which I think is fine. But here's the good news. If you can get that returned, because Verizon, I'm sure they told you this, plans to offer the Galaxy Note 2 on its network. So if you can't return it, then you got to go to AT&T and get an account and a SIM for it. If you can, then it would, frankly, I'd prefer it on Verizon because their LTE network is so fast.
Yeah, that might be the thing, because I've had T-Mobile here at my home, Sprint, and neither one of them work here because we're blocked by a hill here. And,
so you do need, then you need Verizon.
I go to Verizon.
Yeah. Can you get can you return the phone?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I can do that.
Amazon's pretty good about that. Amazon, that's one good reason to buy from Amazon, is they're, as long as it's directly from Amazon, they're very good about returns.
Okay, I'll do that then. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, my apologies. I should have been more clear about that, Gary.
Yeah, because I travel so much that...
Well, that's the problem, is that Verizon does not work. These CDMA phones do not work in most of the rest of the world. There's only a few places where you can use CDMA, Japan, Canada, I think Mexico.
Yeah.
But you go to Europe and it's all GSM. Now, Verizon does sell world phones. In fact, interestingly enough, the new iPhone 5 is a very good world phone because it is a CDMA phone, but it has a SIM card for GSM, and it's unlocked. So if you got to England, for instance, you could pick up, they sell for, I think, £20, a SIM card from Three that you could put in a cell phone in Great Britain and get unlimited data for £20 for a month, which is a great deal. So... I'll tell you, you know, I'm going to Australia, and I'm absolutely bringing, well, I'm bringing the Galaxy Note 2 because I love it. It's really almost a tablet. The thing is 5.5 inches and very fast. By the way, you talked about your System 360, the old IBM mainframe you used. I'll have to look it up, but this is the Galaxy Note is quad core. I think it's 1.5 or maybe even 1.7 gigahertz. Four processors running at 1.5 gigahertz, plus 2 gigabytes of RAM. it's an astounding, the power in this is probably exceeds that of a thousand IBM System 360s together. It's just remarkable how far we've come. But there's no Fortran on this, so that would be a little bit of a disadvantage. Gary, thank you. I'm sorry if I misled you. I do like this phone, but it is designed for GSM networks. If you buy an unlocked phone, that's almost always the case. If you want to run on Verizon, you got to get it from them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. So we did, thank you to the chat room. Yeah, just don't stand there. That's good. Thank you. I'll take it. Thank you to the chat room for the little calculation here. The IBM System 360 computer from 1964 was 19.2 million floating point operations per second. That's pretty fast. That's pretty good. It's about one-tenth the speed of a Galaxy Note 2. And, of course, with the extra, with 2 gigabytes of memory, you've got 10. Oh, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. You got 10 gigaflops in your pocket. Okay. It's 1/1000th. Okay, never mind. So my phone is 1,000 times faster, but it doesn't have Fortran. It's kind of meaningless because you're not doing the same things. And in fact, many of the things that you do on a smartphone take so much more CPU power to do, you know, even just a video game. 1,000 times faster. That's kind of cool to think about that. And 2 gigabytes of memory. I mean, I remember, I mean, in my short lifetime, being the young man that I am, I remember when it was a big deal that you could get a 2 gigabyte hard drive with a computer, with a Windows machine. That was a big deal. This phone has 2 gigabytes of memory, RAM. And then I think it's got 16 gigabytes of internal storage. You can add another 64 of an SD card. I mean, really, seriously, the phones nowadays are more powerful than supercomputers of just a decade ago. It's quite amazing. 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of storage. And then, of course, you know, it was $600. It was expensive. Amazing. $2,000 for a Gateway PC with a 2-gig hard drive, says Stormbringer in 1999. Price and performance, just it's amazing. The price has plummeted. The performance has skyrocketed. 8888 Ask Leo. We're talking tech. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. I love talking about this stuff with you. Our website is techguylabs.com. Jason in Maryland is next. Hey, Jason, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing?
Well, I'm great. Welcome.
Okay, can I say two things before we get to my question?
You may indeed.
Okay, one, when are you guys coming back to Maryland?
Well, it's been a while. We were in Towson. Patrick Norton and I signed signed autographs in Towson, Maryland in, what was that, 2002?
I think I remember you when you went to Brundle Mills.
Oh, yeah, that's right. When was that, 2003?
Yeah.
I'm due back.
Yeah.
I love Maryland, actually. Now, when's soft shell crab season? Because that's when I'm coming.
Not really sure, because they've been having a hard time for that.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sure the storms don't help.
Yeah.
Okay, that was question one. So, as soon as I can, I will come back and say hi. You know, you can always come out here. We have an open studio at Tech Guy Labs, and we often have a live studio audience. You're always welcome to visit. We do shows all week long in Northern California, Petaluma. It. Yeah, I'd love to show it off. I'm very proud of what we've done here. Question two.
All right, question two is the one car is talking about headsets.
Yeah.
Logitech H800, they work for Mac and PC.
Ah, that's good. That's the ClearChat 800?
I think so.
All right. Yeah, I'm always a little hesitant because not all Logitechs work. Now, that's a wireless headset, and I'm not a big fan of wireless. So again, I'm going to stand by my recommendation. They're not expensive. The Plantronics Dot Audio USB headset. The I think it's $655 is about $40, and you get great audio. Most of our hosts, we just, you know, when we get a guest on the show, we say, "What do you got?" And they'll say, "Well, I was going to use my iPhone earbuds," and we say, "No, you may not. Give me your address, and we'll FedEx you the Logitech 655s. They really sound good. $27 at Amazon. Thank you, Toad Sloth, in our chat room. All right, what's your question, Jason?
Okay, I have a Nexus 7. I have a few other tablets. When the storm went out, we lost power. I don't have a generator. But I also have a ATI All-in-One TV tuner USB card.
Yeah.
And I want to know if would it ever work when a Nexus or the new Windows tablet came out.
That's an interesting question. I doubt it would work on the Nexus. You'd need drivers for it to work. It might work on a Windows machine, and the Windows Surface tablet is a Windows machine. Probably not RT, but Windows 8 Pro might with Media Center. Definitely not on the Nexus 7 would be my guess. It's a driver issue. You know, it's USB, so the physical interface is compatible. But what the computer does with the data it gets over the physical interface is the issue. And unless the computer understands what it's talking to, that's what a driver is, by the way. Driver is just a little bit of software that says, okay, you're going to see this thing on the USB port. It calls itself, you know, the TV tuner. Here's how you talk to it. Here's the kind of data you're going to get from it. And here's what to do with it. That's what a driver does. And so, same thing for that Logitech 800. You got to have a driver. You could physically connect it, but that's not enough. Now, it's a little confusing because there are standard drivers for things like keyboards and mouse. Cameras, too, often. So many devices come with a standard driver that you could plug in, a mouse. Or, for instance, on the Surface tablet, it does have a standard USB port. So I plug in a mouse or a keyboard, it's going to work. It may not have all the features available if it's a specialized mouse or keyboard, but it will work as a basic HID or human interface device. That's the driver. So there's always a driver, always a driver. Computers don't know nothing unless you tell them. The question is, does the computer already have a driver, or can you find one that works? And that, you know, just depends. Windows 8 will almost certainly, the Pro, and this is, by the way, get ready, because I'm going to have to do this for the next 5 or 6 years. I'm going to have to distinguish the Windows RT, which is the tablet version of Windows 8, from Windows 8 Pro, which is a desktop operating system. Windows 8 Pro is very much like Windows 7. It will run whatever Windows 7 will run, including that tuner card, and certainly a mouse and a keyboard. Windows 8 RT, well, all bets are off. It has a very limited set of drivers. I'm sorry that to hear about your troubles with the boy. So many of our viewers and listeners are, you know, just suffering through great challenges, unfortunately, due to Sandy. So take care, stay safe, and I guess it's going to get better. 8888 Ask Leo. Harold is in North Carolina. You're our next caller. Hi, Harold. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
I've got a problem with a home-built computer I built about 5 or 6 months ago.
Okay. Oh, hang on. I hear the magic music telling me we're going to take a break. You will be next, Harold, when we come back. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the the phone number. Website's techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did you hear that clonk? My iPad mini falling over again. Just don't like this. The smart case has got, you know, maybe it's because I'm comparing it with the Surface RT, which has this click, you know, kickstand, and it's just really solid. I mean, you can, you know, that's a solid stand, and the iPad mini just falls right over. You know, I'm trying to play The Simpsons Tapped Out, and every time I tap it, the thing wobbles. That's no good. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, we were talking to Harold before the break, and I had to abruptly cut him off. Sorry, Harold.
Oh, that's all right.
What can I do for you?
Okay. We ready to go?
Yeah, what can I do for you?
Yes, I was saying that I have a home-built desktop that I built 5 or 6 months ago that I use for my video work and also for my Plex server. And I am getting a system beep, and I cannot figure out where it's coming from or what it's called.
When do you get the beep? All the time?
No, mostly when I'm doing video work, either when I'm rendering using Handbrake to back up a DVD, or sometimes even just playing a high-def HD YouTube video.
Well, that's annoying because the last thing you want to do is hear a beep.
No.
Yeah.
I can give you some of my components.
No, that's not necessary.
I have run a diagnostic on the memory. It's not the memory.
This is the issue with building your own, is that there's nobody you can call, is there?
Just you.
Just me. It's just one beep, just a little boop.
No, it's more of a 10-second beep.
A long beep. Oh, that's an alarm. And I would guess almost certainly it's a temperature alarm.
Sometimes about the highest it's gotten has been about 65 degrees Celsius.
Well, that's pretty hot. that's very hot. Is that the motherboard temperature or is that
the CPU?
Well, modern CPUs get pretty hot. 65 is pretty hot.
Now, I've got quite a few fans on it, but I do just have the stock heat sink. I'm anticipating...
I think you're all right. Sometimes when you build your own computer, the one issue is you might put, believe it or not, either too little or too much thermal paste on the fan. You put a fan on the CPU, or did it come with one?
It came pre-applied.
Ah, good. Much less likely to have a problem, although even at the factory, they can misapply the thermal paste.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
65 degrees is not too bad.
Or do the AMD FX 8120s have a problem overheating? Or?
Well, I'm not familiar with their temperature range. This certainly would be within the range for an Intel chip, so I think it's probably all right. What I would do is look at your BIOS settings.
Okay.
You probably in BIOS settings have a setting for the temperature alarm.
Yeah, it's an ASUS motherboard, so it has the...
So you go in the BIOS, and in all likelihood, that's what that sound is. And it makes sense, given what you just told me. When would it get hottest? Well, when it's rendering videos or playing back HD video.
Yeah.
So my guess is that it is... if it gets too hot, it shuts down. So it's not saying... It's a warning, not a... But if you can change the setting in BIOS, which I think you probably can, I would turn it up, make it 70 or 75 degrees centigrade. No higher than that, though. 65 is really that's why you're getting a warning. In a normal situation, that's something to be concerned about. But given that you are really running it when you're rendering video or you're watching an HD video, you're working that sucker. That's why it's so hot. I would check, make sure your fans have clean line of sight to the CPU. You know, sometimes when you put wiring in there, it blocks the fans. Make sure when you build your own, by the way, this is exactly why I don't really recommend building your own. You don't save any money. You have the issue of, well, who do you call if there's a problem? Nobody is the answer because the motherboard's from one company, the fan's from another, the CPU's from another. There's no one to call. They'll blame each other. And finally, you could put it together in such a way that it's got little issues like this. For instance, if you didn't keep those wires, well trimmed and out of the way, the cooling wouldn't work. You want to make sure that as you put in the fans that they're properly configured. And when a Dell designs a computer, they spend a lot of time designing airflow in the case. The fans in front blow, the fans in back suck. They draw the air through the case. If you put the fans both pointing in, blowing into the case, guess what? All you're doing is creating turbulence, not cooling. All of these things experienced PC manufacturers handle. But when you do it yourself, you get things like when the computer works hard, it beeps at you for 10 seconds. That's exactly why I generally tell people don't build your own computer. There's no – the only reason – and Harold, might be completely legitimate reason for you to do this is because you want to pick each and every component. You want to learn how it all works together. You want to be able to service it because guess what? that's what you're learning, how to service it, because no one else is going to help you. It's a great learning experience. That's what the chat room's telling me. That's code for you. You got the bruises to show it. My suggestion would be that you could nudge those alarm warnings up a little bit, but don't do it too much because you really don't want it to run much hotter than that. You can look up, and it's simple Google. Just look up the AMD CPU that you have and its rating, its thermal rating, and they'll tell you how hot it should get, and you don't want it to get any hotter than that. And I admire you, Harold. I admire your gumption for doing that yourself. Doug in Arizona, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. Good to talk to you.
Thanks.
Hey, listen, I have two specific questions, and I'm hoping they'll be easy for you, but they're way over my head. I have an old digital camera I need to replace, and I just need a recommendation toward a simple, reliable point-and-shoot digital camera. It must have a good macro feature because I do clock and watch repair, and I photograph.
Oh, neat.
And I do, I take pictures of little screws and little gears that are maybe no more than an eighth of an inch or 16th of an inch in diameter.
How fun.
So I need to be able to accurately render those.
So what's your budget, and how compact does it have to be? Are there issues like that? Do you want to be waterproof, compact? What other features are you looking for? Macro, I got.
Okay, macro, easy to operate. I am not no Ansel Adams.
Yeah.
I have no aspiration to be a super effed up guy.
So you don't want a digital SLR.
No.
Yeah, no. Heaven forfend.
Yeah, I need to keep it, I'd say, around 200.
200 bucks? Ooh, I'm glad you told me that.
Yeah, and, well, maybe I could go up a little bit, but not much. We travel, so we take family pictures, scenery photos, things like that.
Yeah.
And that's my camera question.
Yeah.
I also have a computer file question.
Okay.
any thoughts? Or?
Well, I was going to suggest the Nikon P7000, which is my friend Andy Anatko does a lot of reviews. It's a Coolpix camera. It's a little more. It's under 300, though. And just amazing image quality. Let's talk a little more when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're talking before the break with a watchmaker, which I love, Doug in Arizona. He needs to take pictures of little teeny tiny screws and gears.
Yeah, little bitty tiny things.
Little bitty, bitty, witty things. So most good point-and-shoots now have decent macro. I mean, the best macro, of course, is going to be with an interchangeable lens, a macro lens. But I'm going to give you, but you don't want something that elaborate. I am going to say that you should spend a little more, maybe 300 instead of 200.
Okay. Well, maybe I should tell you what I was getting by on until it died yesterday. It was a Fuji Finepix A340.
Yeah, no, I like the Finepix. I have owned many Finepix. Fuji makes great stuff, and you could get another Fuji, actually. They're very good cameras. The Nikon, now the P7100. They've come out with the newest one, but my friend Andy Anatko, who is a great photographer, he writes for the Chicago Sun-Times, raved and actually bought the P7000. He loved that one. Another recommendation, strong recommendation, is the Canon PowerShot S100. The current version is the S110.
PowerShot
S100. Really excellent camera. I'm a fan of the Canon SLRs, and I think that their point-and-shoots are very good as well.
Oh, okay. What was the first recommendation, please?
That was the Nikon P, as in Paul, 7000. The current one's a 7100, but you can still get the 7000, and you save by getting the older version.
Okay, I got you.
Now, the chat room is telling me they really like, and it's under $200, the Canon PowerShot SX-160. It's under $200, so you know.
PowerShot 160. Okay, PowerShot, there's a letter, 160.
PowerShot SX-160, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. You don't have to write this down. We'll put this all in the show notes for you, and you'll find links to all three. I'm looking on Amazon at the PowerShot SX-160 from Canon. 16 megapixels, wide angle, $179. So it may be that the truth is you don't have to pay more than $200. I would check on the specs to see if it does support macro photography. The cameras, digital cameras, have gotten so good. And $999 really likes, in our chat room, the XZ1 from Olympus. So James, write all those down, okay? The XZ1 from Olympus. All good. All good cameras. The difference in between a point-and-shoot and a larger SLR or even a Micro Four Thirds camera is the size of the sensor besides the interchangeable lenses, which is will make a difference for macro photography, certainly. But the size of the sensor, a bigger sensor gives a better image quality. Does better in low light, too. Looks like almost any point-and-shoot that you get is going to have a decent macro, and including that Olympus, that sounds like a good choice too. Now I'm giving you more choices than you probably wanted. Web 2345 likes the SX-160. That's from Canon. It does have macro. What macro photography is the ability to shoot something at actual size. In effect, what they call it 1:1. So if you're shooting a picture of a screw, you can get close enough that the screw is actually full size on the image. That's macro photography, 1:1. They are pointing me, and I do recommend you do this, to a couple of websites for camera reviews. I love DP Review, Digital Photography Review, dpreview.com. I would certainly look there. Also, digitalcamerainfo.com. Two good places to go for online reviews, as long as you understand they generally cater to the enthusiast crowd. So when it comes to point and shoots and less expensive cameras, they may be a little dismissive. Unnecessarily so, I think. They've gotten quite good. Doug in, we were just talking to Doug in Arizona. Oh, he had another question, actually. Let me, you were asking about carbonite.
Yeah, hi. I was hoping you'd get to my other question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Regarding carbonite, I tried the 2-week a trial. I loved it, paid for it, got it, and I'm just blown away by it. However, I have an issue with some of my digital image, pictures. I've got so many of them. I discovered that some of them are backing up, and others refuse to be backed up. I got on their tech site, or I should say on their live chat, customer support. Turned out the issue is some of my digital files, JPEG image files, are classified as a temporary file or a system file. And all I have...
Of course, Carbonite doesn't want to back up either of those.
No, they don't. It doesn't. But somehow, I have no clue, and it's almost irrelevant how it happened. The fact is that it did happen. Sometimes within one folder, some are fine, yeah, and they're backed up. Others are not. All I have to do is open them with a photo editor, rename it to something. So I have my finger hovered over the letter X, and I save as keeping the same file number with a little letter X on the end of it, and then delete the original, and it's fine. But there's so many. Is there a way I can select a bunch of them at a time and bulk make them, in bulk, make them not a system file? Or do I have to go one by one by
yeah,
one?
Yeah, there are quite a few batch file changing, batch mode file permissions changing things. And in fact, I think, as I remember, you could even do it by shift clicking. So let me find you the easiest way to do this. I'm sure that the chat room is suggesting something called bulk rename utility. You're on Windows, I presume. Of course you are. Yeah.
Yeah, Windows 7.
Yeah. So there are quite a few of these programs that'll let you just kind of go file renamer, basic. I would try bulk rename utility. Most of them will allow you to also change the file type. And that's what's happening is for some reason the file type is kind of changing to something that it shouldn't be. I'm not sure why. I would actually be more concerned about why it's happening because it's going to presumably continue to happen.
Well, I don't know, but I will tell you that my folder, everything is under a master folder under the C drive called Doug's folder, and under that is my MP3s and then all, you know, my resumes and of course, my image folders.
Let me recommend, this is from JoJo. I like JoJo. Oh. JoJo's Freeware Utilities. It's called JoJo's at jojosoft.com. It's called JoJo Rename Master, and this thing is a power tool, and it's free, which is nice. It'll rename files. I'm pretty sure it'll also. What you want to do is change the system attributes or file attributes, and I believe it'll change that. And since you're a photographer, you might also like the fact that you can change EXIF tags, JPEG tags, MP3 tags, and more with it. It's very powerful. Doesn't even require any installation. It's JoJo Soft, J-O-E-J-O-E Soft .com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I do want to talk about ShareFile. Gosh, I love ShareFile.
So how, in fact, let me show you because I need to do a ShareFile with Kyle, right? So I have all of these, files for the shows next week that I have to share with Kyle. So I'm going to log into my ShareFile account. I'll just do this real quickly here. And you see we have it, by the way, customized. That's one of the nice things about ShareFile. It gets customized for your industry as well as your company. So we got the Twit logo and everything. I'm going to go to the Premiere folder. And I want to send Kyle. I could send him a folder. I could just say, let me send you the whole folder. But what I want to do is just send him the files in the individual files. So I'm gonna select all these files here. Whoops, pressed the wrong button. Just select all these files, and I'm gonna press send. Now there is an Outlook plugin. I don't use Outlook, but there's an Outlook plugin that makes it just like email. In this case, all I'm gonna do is say, give me a link I can copy, and using my own email software, send. And I have all these features. This makes it fully HIPAA compliant. Things like, for instance, email when the file has been downloaded. Check or uncheck that. Require recipients to enter name and email before downloading so you can track it. You can control how long that access applies. Like, I don't want them to use those after a month. How many times you can download them? Unlimited, 1 to 10. All of that then gets attached to the file. I'm going to uncheck all that because I want to send them. I'm just going to send them this link. Now, I copy that to the clipboard, go to my email program, and I can send that to Kyle right now. And that's going to be all the files I've copied already. And Kyle, you want me to send that to your live account, your Bootcamp Lights account, or your Premiere Radio account? I'll tell you what. I'll send it to your Gmail account. DC101 or Kyle. You get like more emails. KyleMcGibenham at gmail.com. Okay, here's the tracks. Which one?
That's not me.
That's not you?
That's not you?
That's the other Kyle Benham that I guess he lives in here in LA.
DC 101?
That's me, Kyle DC 101.
Okay. Okay. So I'm gonna send him the link. Channel 7. Just like that. And let me show you what he gets. This is so cool. So wrong thing. Let's go here. Paste in the link. And so what he'll see is this, which is very simple. Shows him the list of files, who created them. And he has one button to download them all, or he can uncheck them and download just a few of them. Twit logo, the whole thing. This is so sweet. ShareFile
is so much better than all the other ways to do this. You keep control. It's HIPAA compliant. It's totally secure. It's from Citrix, so you know they've crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's. I want you to get it right now. Free for 30 days. Go to ShareFile.com and use TechGuy as the promo code, and you can try it for 30 days free. I'm a big fan. It's the easiest way. I've tried them all. I've tried all those, you know, the other ones. You know which ones I'm talking about. Nuh-uh. All sorts of trouble. Not ShareFile. And when you're doing what I do, and you're sending big files, I can't come back from Australia and send them again. Actually, the neat thing about ShareFile, they have smart apps, so you can see all your ShareFile stuff. And so, actually, I could go on my phone, run the ShareFile app. See, I'll show it to you on... I have it on all my phones. Which one? Here, I'll show you something that you can see. I'll put it on the iPad. And so this would actually be, if I'm in Australia and I go, oh, he didn't get them, I just launch the ShareFile app and resend it. I don't have to have the file on my iPad. So it's pretty cool. I really like it. ShareFile.com. Use TechGuy as the offer code and you will get 30 days free. See if I can find one that's logged in. I have it on all my. Here it is. This is on the note. Oh, I have to log in. Oh, no, I don't have to. So there, same thing. You can do exactly the same thing I just did. So here's the pre-records, and I could just select all of these and send them. It's so slick. Or I can go back. Send him the whole file, the whole folder. Don't you love it? Really cool. ShareFile.com. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Bill in Michigan's reminding me. I think there's an election coming up, isn't there, on Tuesday? Have you... I voted because I'm leaving for Australia, so I did the absentee thing. And I was looking for a place to, just to get, kind of unbiased information. In California, we have a lot of primary ballot initiatives. Well, not primary ballot, just ballot initiatives. And I found a wonderful place to do my research called Ballotpedia. And Bill in Michigan is reminding me, and I should probably mention it now. You know, don't wait until you get in the ballot box to vote, to figure out what you're going to vote on, because even if you bring the pamphlet, you won't get enough information. So I was very impressed. This is kind of a Wikipedia for politics. They call it an interactive almanac of state politics. And so in California, we have all these ballot measures. I'm sure where you are, it's just as crazy. You click on the state, and it will show you all the measures. In California, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different propositions we have to vote on. Oh, my goodness. It shows you who donated, you know, who supported it, showed you the editorials, pro and con. Gives you the official voter guide summary, fiscal impact, arguments in favor, arguments against. Seems to be completely nonpartisan. I'm very impressed by that. It's information. This is what the internet was made to do, wasn't it? And I really love seeing who gave money to support that proposition. That gives you a lot of information about who, you know, why, who's behind this. Really useful. I've never seen anything more complete. Plus, if you want to see what the different newspapers say, it's got links to that, too, if you want to read the editorials. Very, very, very handy. Ballotpedia.com. Now, I presume that for the presidential election, you've probably already got enough information. It does have some stuff there. It's really more for members of Congress, ballot measures, state executives, state legislatures, all of the hard stuff. That's the hard stuff, right? Voting for the president, that's easy. You got the debates, you got lots of information, articles. It's the more obscure stuff that takes a lot of research and really worth doing it, I think, to be an informed electorate. Nice job. Ballotpedia.com. And I should actually see who put this together. Originally formed by the Citizens in Charge Foundation in 2007, the Sam Adams Alliance is a chief sponsor. Their mission is to use online media to promote access to government. Official sponsor in 2009, Lucy Burns Institute, a nonprofit. But really, I think most of the information is, it's really, I just think, well done. Nonpartisan, all the information you need. That's what the internet was designed to do. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. We also have a great website of our own, techguylabs.com, where you can annotate my answers. We've got this is so fun. So we put the show notes there right away. James is writing that down right now. Then after the fact, we take the video of the show, because we put it up on YouTube. So take the video of the show, chop it up so that you can see the question, the actual call. You can watch and listen to the actual call and my actual answer. But then, and I hope you'll do this, you can comment and you can add value to that. And that's all free, and I hope you'll take advantage of that. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Alex in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello. Yes. Hi, Alex.
How are you doing?
Welcome. I'm great. How are you?
Oh, brilliant. I have actually got two questions. One of the things is I've got an affordable MacBook, basically a $200 MacBook Air, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, how I could connect it to my flat-screen telly, which is edgeless Samsung TV.
So you have a MacBook Air, and you want to put the screen...
It's not actually a MacBook Air. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it on the radio, but it's a Hackintosh, technically.
Okay, so I don't know how to help you with a Hackintosh because I don't know what capabilities that has. But if you have Mountain Lion on a MacBook Air, you can use AirPlay to play it right onto the TV if you have an Apple TV or a TV that's compatible with AirPlay. So my recommendation, I don't think this will work with a Hackintosh. I don't know. This is the problem with making a Hackintosh, which is using cheap PC hardware and then putting OS X on it, is that some things may not work quite right. I guess I don't see any reason why. It's just using Wi-Fi, I guess, right? So it might be worth a try if you have Mountain Lion, the latest version of OS X on it. An Apple TV, $99, will allow you to AirPlay without any wires, the connection from the computer onto any big screen TV. AirParrot is software that you can run if you don't have Mountain Lion. You could also, depending on the PC hardware you have, and this is you make a physical connection. So some laptops, for instance, have HDMI out. Then it's simple. It's trivial. You just plug that into the back of the TV. You're good. So that would be one way to do it. If you have a DVI out of the laptop or a VGA out of the laptop, you'll have to get the appropriate adapter. Hook that up. AirParrot might be the best choice for you. Take a look at that. Just Google that and install it, and that might really solve the problem the easiest. Again, it's all up in the air because you're not using a Mac Apple hardware. I'm not sure really what, you know, what capabilities of that laptop are. AirParrot.com. But see, that requires an Apple TV too. So the problem is, you know, most TVs don't support this wirelessly, but an Apple TV does. I don't know. If you spent $200 on your laptop, maybe you're willing to spend another $100 to get the video out onto a big screen. Dave in Atlanta, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Uncle Leo?
I'm great. How you doing, nephew Dave?
Pretty good. I got a question for you. I just want to shoot like some documentary, just like, you know, some family stuff, maybe some low budget documentary. And I'm running a PC on Windows 7. I was wondering if you had any tips for video editing software, because I'm new at this. I have no idea where to start. I'm looking probably about a range about $250 to spare.
You don't even have to spend that much. Now, there's a free solution that's not bad from Microsoft. Now, I didn't used to recommend this, but Windows Movie Maker is actually not bad. You can get it. It doesn't come with your Windows PC, but you can get it if you have a late model PC at live.com, get.live.com. It's called Windows Movie Maker. It's not a bad start. If you want to get a little fancier, a little nicer, and frankly use something that I think is higher quality, under $100, Adobe Premiere Elements. Now, the pros use Adobe Premiere. That's the expensive package for video editing. A lot of movies and TV shows are made with Adobe Premiere. Elements, just like Photoshop Elements is the, you know, affordable version of the big boy, Adobe Premiere Elements is the affordable version of Adobe Premiere. And I think it's great, Dave. It even has DVD burning capabilities and all the features that you'd want, and templates and themes and everything. I think you're going to love it.
Oh, okay, and I can add, like, different, like, multiple audio tracks and
yep.
do picture and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, if you want to get that fancy, to forget Windows Movie Maker. You definitely want to get Premiere Elements.
Okay, Premiere Elements, yeah. Okay.
The next step up from that is Sony Vegas, which is also quite good. V-E-G-A-S, like the city. Also very good, and that's a little more in your, you know, a little more expensive. A little upper to $200 or $300 there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mouth is not working.
Well, don't you know that other kids are starving in Japan? So eat it. Just eat it. Don't want to argue. I don't want to debate. Don't want to hear about what kind of food you hate. You won't get no dessert till you clean up your plate. So
just eat it.
Don't you tell me.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, that's the number. Little Weird Al to get us going here. Jim in Rialto, California, you're next. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, I just have a question for you. I went out and ordered the the Note 2 to Verizon.
I apparently am selling a lot of these Note 2s. You're the second guy today.
Well, you know what? Your caller had an interesting question, and it started made me think. That's why I wanted to call in. First of all, I'm jumping ship from my Apple 4S. I love the phone, but I just need something with bigger screen real estate. So
I'm with you. Once you go to 5.5 inches, 3.5 inches seems awfully small.
Yeah, so I mean, I really could be more productive with the, you know, with the work that I do, you know, when I'm away from the office.
Well, it's also 1280 by 800. I mean, I guess this one's 720. 1280 by 720. So there's a lot of screen real estate.
Yeah, so that's the reason. But you know, the question was that when I was ordering through Verizon, which, you know, unfortunately, I have to wait till the 25th, I believe, is when it's going to get shipped back to or when I'm going to get it.
Right.
Thing is that I got a dialogue box when I was ordering it, and the dialogue box said, would you like to make this an international phone or world phone? I don't know the term they use, but, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, to my knowledge, I don't know. That's, when you get the iPhone 5 on Verizon, it is truly a world phone. So, as I was telling the guy when we talked last hour, the world technology, there's two things you need. You need, first of all, it to be a GSM phone. You also need it to support the GSM. Unfortunately, frequencies are not the same in every country, so it has to support the GSM frequencies of the country that you're going to. Now, if it does both of those, it's absolutely going to work. And because GSM allows you to kind of interchange the brain of the phone, but with a SIM card, you could actually buy a SIM card in the country you go to, have a local number, local data, save a lot of money. Now, Verizon, it sounds like Verizon does offer world phones. And a true world phone would be a phone that supports GSM and the frequencies in the places you're going. I don't know, because I haven't seen it, if the Galaxy Note that Verizon's going to offer will be like the iPhone 5, where it will have both CDMA and GSM. The iPhone 5 does. It has a SIM card, but it's also a CDMA phone, so it supports both.
When I was ordering it, it asked me, would you like a SIM card?
Great. Good news. That's great news.
I said, yes, I would. And then it said, this will give you capability as an international phone. I don't know the terminology.
Man, I'm going to buy one. I'm going to send back this one. That's fantastic news. And I guess the guy who is listening, I hope he's still listening, bring it to Verizon and say, put a SIM in there. I did that with the iPhone 5, and now you can use it. There's pretty much nowhere you can't use it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was able to upgrade to the 5, but I wanted to wait to see when the Note 2 was going to come out because I wanted to compare. Right. I personally was waiting for iPhone 5 because I wanted to see what they were going to come out with. But, you know, I mean...
Well, I think that's exactly right. Galaxy Notes are selling like hotcakes all of a sudden, and I think Samsung said we think people were waiting to see what Apple did, and then they decided to buy a Galaxy instead.
A row of icons more is not going to impress me on the screen.
It's not a big difference.
Yeah.
So good news. I did not know that. I'm very pleased to hear that. That means that they're doing the same thing with the Galaxy Note that they did with the Apple iPhone 5, which is that it's a dual band phone. That's great.
Now, what kind of a learning curve would it be for me to, like, for example, import all of my music onto my Note 2? I know I have to buy...
No, you don't have to buy anything.
Okay.
So you already are using iTunes?
I do, but I also have Google Play, which I just signed up for yesterday.
Great.
So when I get the phone, I can start using Google Play right away.
Oh, that's fantastic. So with iTunes, that means, first of all, you want to make sure you want to uncopy protect that music. So if you've got DRM'd music on there, that will not copy over or be usable on your Note 2. Fortunately, iTunes eliminated copy protection a couple of years ago. Anything you bought recently will be fine. You can use iTunes Match to replace copy protected music with unprotected music for $25. That's probably worth it. I did that. So my entire iTunes collection is now unprotected. And then there's a free program called Double Twist that works just like iTunes. It will synchronize over the air or via cable. If it's a big collection, start with cable. To your Galaxy and copy all the files over, and it also copy the iTunes playlists over. The only thing you'll lose is things like play counts, ratings, things like that.
Okay, that's not a big deal. I just want to be able to still listen to my music.
It's wonderful. And the nice thing about Google Play, if you've got time, is you can have Google upload all your songs to the cloud, and then they're all available from the cloud on your phone. So you don't even have to occupy space on the phone. Amazon does the same thing. The Amazon MP3 library. You'll put some software on your computer that will see all your music, match it up to the cloud, and then it'll all be available. So Google Music's a great deal, I think.
That's awesome, Ben. So that was my only question because, I do want to have it as an international phone because I do travel.
I wish I'd known because I bought the unlocked GSM version because I thought that was the one I needed for travel. I did not know Verizon was going to do that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so I wanted the LTE and I wanted the screen size, so that's why I wanted it.
LTE, absolutely. Boy, if you're in a Verizon LTE area, it's amazing how fast that is.
Yeah.
Now, I should warn you, you probably will not get LTE internationally. They use different frequencies.
Oh, yeah, no, I knew that, but I mean, at least I want to be able to have, without having to rent a phone
And I'll be honest, you don't want LTE internationally because the cost of international data is so high that, you don't want to download 20 megabits a second. you could spend $1,000 an hour easily.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Be very careful on that one. In fact, before I leave for Australia tomorrow, I will be getting international plans on all of my phones so that and I'll be very careful to meter my usage. You can really rack up a bill.
Wow. Okay. Good to know.
Hey, thanks, Jim.
I don't like the fact that they're taking me off my unlimited data, though.
Oh, they did that to me, too. They don't want to offer that. Any excuse.
Yep. Yeah, that's a bummer.
I got that notice, too, yeah.
I thought I'd get grandfathered in or something.
No, they can't because LTE, you're just too much data.
Yeah.
You start watching Netflix on LTE, you're getting high-def video. It's a gigabit an hour. I mean, it just starts to really add up.
Yeah. All right, then. Thanks, Leo.
Thank you. Great to talk to you. Where are you going?
Well, I do travel, but, I'm not traveling anytime soon.
Oh, okay.
I just want to have that capability travel, I'm able not to worry about it.
Me too. I'm always very aware of it because I want to be able to take my phone and my phone number with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a
thank you, Jim.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Yeah, the you know what I used to do, and I don't think you need to do this anymore. What I used to do is get an unlocked GSM phone, and then just take it with me. And when I got to where I was going, I'd buy a SIM card in that country and pop it in. You have a local number. Nowadays, they've got world phones for almost everybody. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, you know, I want to talk, as long as we're talking about upgrading phones, be a good time to talk about Gazelle! Gazelle! The best way to recycle your old stuff. Look, I know more about this subject than any human alive, because I don't keep a phone for more than a few months. I'm always moving to the next big thing. So what happens to the old phones? People often ask me. Well, I just have to tell you, Gazelle.com. See, there's always somebody who wants that old phone. And I guess if you had the time and the inclination, you could put an ad in the paper or go to eBay. But why not just go to Gazelle? Look, I've got a Galaxy S3 I want to get rid of. Let's go to gazelle.com. Samsung. It is a unlocked Galaxy S3. Let me find it here. It's the white 32 gigs. There it is. It's in flawless. Well, it's not quite flawless. Let's say it's good condition. By the way, their data experts will validate the condition and often will upgrade you. They say, no, this is better than you said. I'm going to give you more money. Believe it or not, I don't know why they do that, but they do. They also wipe all your data. You don't have to worry about that if you forget. Hey, what? $241. Woohoo! So now here's the deal. This is good for 30 days, by the way. So there's no risk at getting this quote. And I got to tell you, you should do it sooner than later because they always go down in value. Nothing's going up in value. So you add that to your box. Then you say, oh, you know, as long as I'm selling that, you ought to get rid of that iPhone 4S. I don't use that anymore. That was an AT&T. Yeah. I think I had the 64 gig. Yeah. Well, $265, but put that in the box. You got an iPod maybe you want to dump? An iPad? Gonna go to the fourth generation iPad? Want to get rid of your iPad 3? All of this. Now, here's the beauty part. They pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. They send you a special box. You seal it in that box. Then the turnaround's great. They wipe off the data. They send you a check, a PayPal credit, or an Amazon gift card. Pro tip, do the Amazon gift card for 5% more. Gazelle. Load up that box. It's such a good feeling when it's all gone to the great gazelle in the sky. And then you can justify buying that new gadget. Gazelle.com. The easy way to recycle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the number at 47 past the hour. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, joins us. I'm dying to find out how he survived Sandy. He lives on in New York's Upper West Side, kind of near the boat harbor. In fact, he has a boat. I hope the boat made it. We'll find out in a minute. But first, let's go to Terry in Missouri. Hey, Terry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah. Hi, Leo.
Hi.
Hey, I got a quick question for you. I'm not computer savvy, so be patient with me.
Okay.
I'm very happy with control delete, and I'm very happy with that button there. I got a new Dell computer a few months ago with Blu-ray on it, and it could be a combination of errors that I did that may have caused a problem. Putting a Blu-ray into the Blu-ray player, it goes into Windows Basic, so I'm running into trouble in that.
That's normal.
All right, it started going to HDMI for some reason, asking for an HDMI cable. I found out I don't have the regular VGA connector.
You know what Steve Jobs called Blu-ray on a computer? A bag of hurt. Apple has never put Blu-ray on a computer, and these are the reasons why. What you're experiencing is Blu-ray is heavily copy protected. So because the movie industry basically assumes that everybody's a thief, and in order for you to play back a Blu-ray movie to anywhere except the computer, you need to have a fully HDCP, that's high definition content protection, HDCP chain.
In other words, the copy protection won't let you play it back unless you have the proper copy protection on all the outgoing devices, and that requires HDMI. So, no, you can't play it through a VGA adapter.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I found that out. But what I'm looking at, also my TV set only has a VGA and HDMI. It's basically a TV flat
right.
screen.
So play through the HDMI.
Yep.
But you have to have an HDCP-compliant TV and cable.
Oh, so I got to look for that now when I buy a new monitor and stuff?
Yeah. I hate the movie industry! And by the way, all this does, and you'll see, you're a newbie right now, Terry, but you'll see all this does is ends up teaching you how to pirate movies so you don't have to go through this. It has the exact opposite effect because guess what? There's no copy protection on that movie you downloaded from Pirate Bay. You don't have to deal with this. You just play it back in beautiful high def.
I was going to use it now, Blu-ray for, I do video editing for church. I was going to use, you know, the Blu-rays for that, and I just ran into that problem there. I never worked with an AMD app on before, and I'm running into problems with it shutting down. I thought it might be because of this Blu-ray issue. I don't know.
No, you know, what Windows does is because it's so Blu-ray is requires so, I mean, you're playing back very high-quality video. It takes a lot of CPU. So it goes back into basic mode, turns off Arrow and all that stuff. It doesn't have enough processor power to do those nice effects and play back a Blu-ray movie.
All right, one more thing, too. The guy who's doing the editing down there in Atlanta,
yeah.
The one I use mostly is the Video Studio 15.
From Pinnacle Systems.
I enjoyed it.
That's a very nice program, yep. They went through a bad period. Version 9 was okay, then 10 and 11 were terrible. So you don't have crashes with 15? It's been reliable for you?
Oh, I love it. You know, I put that Boris Graffiti in there, too, and just absolutely, it's just beautiful. It's almost like movie effect type of title stuff you see 5 years ago that Hollywood was coming out with.
Yeah.
I'm doing now with titles and editing stuff.
Yeah, so. I think I always liked Studio a lot. I stopped using it when it got really crashy, so I'm glad to hear it's back to its good old self. So version 15.
Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas is great, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Before somebody's dumb with computers like me, could I use it, too?
Absolutely. It's more sophisticated. Studio is great because it's very straightforward. It's very easy to use. In fact, for a lot of people, it's probably the right choice because you could figure it out. It's from Pinnacle Systems. The name is so generic, it's sometimes hard to figure out if you've got the right thing. It's Pinnacle Studio, and I think it is very good.
I think I paid mine for $69.
Yeah, it's cheap. Yep. It actually used to come with a lot of hardware.
Oh, I've never, like I said, it's beautiful. I get done with the stuff down there. My pastor's impressed, and everybody else is impressed.
Yeah, you can even do 3D on it, which is kind of cool. Yeah.
I got 30 hours worth of video I tape when I drive a truck, which I'm doing right now. I tape it and cut it slowly down to like maybe 5 minutes with the video, and I use that video editing system on there. It has that sound music thing down there, free music, and copyright music you got to pay for. Put on there a sound design, whatever it's called. Beautiful stuff. So, anyway, I thank you a lot. You have a good trip to Australia, man.
All right. Safe travels to you, too, Terry. Thank you. Nice to talk to you. Okay. Take care. Yeah, the Sony Vegas is a little more expensive. It's a little more high-end. Vegas Pro is about $600. It also, you know, it does a lot more, but whenever something does a lot more, it means there's a steeper learning curve. So, it's certainly for a higher-end product. I would start, I think, you know, Windows Movie Maker, which is free, take a look at that. Studio, I'm glad to hear it's back to its old ways. Pinnacle Studio, it's about $60, $70. A little more, maybe $10 more for the Premiere Elements from Adobe. Like that a lot. And then the next step up is to $600 for Vegas Pro. But I used to think nobody's ever going to edit video because as a television professional, that was always the part of the job I hated the most. Having to go into the edit suite and cut down video, takes hours of work. And I thought, why would anybody ever voluntarily do this? But apparently people do. I still don't. I have all my video, and the home video I've ever shot is all unedited. What I learned was just shoot quick little 6-second snippets. Then you don't have to edit. You can just put it together and think of it as a video photo album. That's how I do it now.
But obviously, if you're going to tell a story, you know, you want to put something together a little bit nicer, it's going to take more work. And, you know, thank goodness there are people in the world who like to do that. Just not me. Frederick in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Frederick.
Oh, you mean Cedric.
Cedric, how you doing?
Yeah. I'm doing all right. I'm doing horrible. I shouldn't say all right.
Oh, Cedric, everybody calls me is doing horrible. Some sort of tech woe, I would imagine.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Just hang up the phone. Just say you're doomed, forget about it, and hang up the phone, and I'll get it.
All right.
I made the first mistake I've made in a long time, and I got Windows 8.
Really? You don't like it?
I actually liked it. It's just that I usually wait about a 6 months to a year before I get one.
Yeah, that's usually a smart idea with anything. Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't know that Windows 8 was this much different. I thought it was just a new way of using it.
No, it's a whole new it's a whole new Windows. Microsoft said Windows reimagined, and it definitely is. It is a whole new Windows.
Yeah, so even the way it's used, I was sort of disappointed. I thought it would. My daughter started using the computer at age four.
Now I think a four-year-old would probably have no trouble with it. There's something about touch the kids seem to get right away.
But I got on this thing, and a lot of it's probably my mistakes. I'll give you the question, so you can move on to your next customer.
Okay.
I put Windows 8 on. I had Windows 7, and for the last couple operating systems, I never had a problem with Windows. That's why I didn't wait a long time. I said, okay, it's going to work fine. It's going to load up and do everything for me. That's what usually happens. I put Windows 8 in here. And then when you load it up and everything's going, it comes
hold
up.
Hold on, Cedric. We managed to run up against the clock, but hang on. We'll get to you right after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I'm in misery.
Should you go for his hand?
Made a star.
You're on.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Poor Cedric. He's got troubles. He's got woes. Hi, Cedric. You still there? Cedric? Oh, did I lose Cedric? You know, he was so worried about not having enough time that he kept saying, I know I'm not going to have enough time, and then he didn't have enough time. So in the future, if you don't think you're going to have enough time, just go full speed ahead. He ran out of time. And then I think I lost him. So I'm sorry, Cedric. I apologize. Dick DiBartolo is here to cheer me up. He is Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He survived Hurricane Sandy. Do you have power in Disneyland?
Plenty of power here at the studio. Zero power at the marina.
So your boat is not on the show today.
Well, my boat's back up and running drop cam wise.
You're kidding. How are you getting the drop cam working? When you're running a cord from
I ran it for 2 days on the wagon portable power supply we talked about last weekend.
2 days
and
that's awesome.
This morning I went down and hooked up an inverter so that now my drop cam is running off the boat batteries.
And is the boat running?
The boat runs fine. Yeah, when I took my first trip on the river yesterday to see some of the damage.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
God, it's a beautiful.
There it is.
It's a beautiful sky.
It's a gorgeous night. Wow. See, but what's great about it now is when those light stanchions light up yellow, I'll know that they have restored the power. So right now, I know there's no power at the marina.
But you know, the marina looks pretty good given the pictures I saw earlier.
Exactly. Although way in the background, you can see one dock standing straight up in the air on the right of your screen. Yeah.
And of course, those pictures of Staten Island I saw in the news. I saw there are people with boats in their yard that were just washed ashore by Hurricane Sandy. So I'm so glad that you and yours did all right.
No, the people who put their boats on shore fared the worst.
Oh, interesting.
A lot of people took them out, put them up on blocks, never realizing the rivers could rise so far they would flood marinas and refloat the boats.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, whatever floats your boat. As they say.
Exactly.
So Dick usually joins us each week with a gadget or a gizmo of some kind. What do you got for us today?
You know, I have a fun gadget. I had another demo of it last week because we talked about it on the Gizwiz, the HavaCam Nero 3.
I have this a... Is,
Oh, Nero, not Hero. Nero.
Nero. Okay. Yes. NEO3. Oh, did you order the Hero?
The Neo.
Okay.
I ordered the Hero 3.
Oh, from GoPro.
GoPro. Oh, okay. This is something else.
Yes. Two totally different systems.
Okay.
This is for teachers, lecturers, people who give lectures or PowerPoint presentations. So you can hook it up to your computer. You can put your documents, your photos, and everything.
Oh, it's a document camera.
Well, it's not actually. Yes, it can be. It can be. But if you're doing presentations, then you can show your pictures. There's a secondary camera so that if from time to time you want to be in the picture talking about your documents, the little annotation bar on the side lets you draw over the pictures or put arrows to what you're talking about. And another neat thing I didn't know about, someone from the company called me on Thursday. You can do freeze frame. You can put something under there, freeze frame it, and then you can change it out for another device or another photo. So while you're talking about the first device, it stays there. And then when you just click the mouse, it'll bring up the second device. And as I said, here in the studio, I have the second camera toward my guest chair. Now, since there's no GizFizz today, Myra would not venture in from uptown. So I have no way to, no guest in the chair. But so you can use it as a two-camera system. Sells for $299. And if you don't need the second camera, there's a model for $219. And has VGA out too, so you can also hook it to a projector. And you can do presentations without a computer that way.
That's great. Now it's really for teachers or anybody. You see it actually. I remember Microsoft, I think, had something similar when they were showing, and Apple too, when they were showing off their phones.
Yeah, exactly. I asked the guy, I said, "What's the biggest market?" And he said, "Schools are the biggest market."
I would say
they buy almost one for every single classroom.
Yeah.
And then on the right side of the screen, you can stack up all the videos you want to show, and then when it's time to show them, just drag them in with your mouse, and they'll start running. It's a great gadget for people who lecture, give presentations, and stuff like that.
Very good. Dick DiBartolo, his website is gizwiz.biz. Go there to find out more and to play the What the Heck Is It game. Brand new game coming soon. So, I guess it started.
Oh, it's up. It's up.
Oh, so what was that Smurf garbage can that you had?
You know what? No one guessed it. Most, a lot of garbage can answers, a lot of, I think it's an ashtray for a fire truck. It was. It looked like a little red garbage can.
It did. Or a fire plug of some kind.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And the item actually is, it's called the Super Rope Cinch.
It's like a knot that's not.
That's exactly. They should use that as a slogan. The knot that's not. Yes, you just drop a line in there, and instead of having to make a half hitch or clove hitch or a bowline, just drop the line in there.
Oh, that's good, because I always confuse my half hitch and my clove hitch, and I can't.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
Figure it out.
Tell me. I would straighten that out before you get that trawler.
That's cool. And now there's a new one, though, but you're not going to tell anybody what it is. It's kind of, I think it's pretty obvious, but
I used to
wear these at camp all the time. So if what you do is you go to gizwiz.biz, you click the What the Heck Is It. Now, there are 12 autographed Mad magazines for the right answer, 24 for the wrong answer. So you guess where your chances are better. And you'll be winning the February 2013 issue of Mad magazine, autographed by that guy right there, Dick DiBartolo. Thank you, Dickie D.
You're welcome. Hey, have a wonderful, safe trip.
Good. I'll be back in a few weeks. Don't forget, we still will do the show. You're still required to show up. We do have the death penalty for hosts who don't show up.
I know. I never should have signed that thing.
every Tuesday, it's the Giz Whiz here on twit.tv, round about 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv. Thanks, Dickie D.
You're welcome. Take care.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have time for one more call. Let's see if I can. Charlie in Glendale, California. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling about the Drobo, which is a mass storage device.
I'm very, 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 very familiar with it.
Oh, good. Well, my main question is I'm going to store music samples on it for composing.
Okay.
And my question is, if I store the content on the Drobo without rewriting and editing on the Drobo just as a storage device, will it last longer? Will the drives last longer?
No. In fact, it doesn't. The drive doesn't wear out faster because you're using it.
I see.
It's the same.
You could
make the case that it's better to rewrite it because it'll be updated, it'll be freshened, and you might make the case that over time the magnetic signal might deteriorate. But the truth is, it's neither way. The thing is spinning, and it wears out at the same rate whether you write to it or not.
I see. Okay. Well, thanks so much for that.
Great. I like the Drobo a lot. Drobo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See you down under. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.